The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way. For old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
Is there a more rock and roll headline than Bat Pisses in Torch Guitarist's Eye?
All right, then. I am on board for this story.
All right. You know, so Andrew, our other guitar player, he was living in St. Louis, and he had lived in St. Louis, and he had some band stay at his old house, which was like an old house, you know. So apparently, like, when he turned on the light, he saw a shadow. So he looks up, and the guy's like, "Bat!" And all of a sudden, you know, he gets rain in his eye, and then he...
Dave's rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, some albums you might not know that existed, and some albums by some new and up-and-coming artists you might not be aware of. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins, and joining me today is, once again, Mr. Jeff Calhoun.
And his dog, who is woofing in the background.
The paper doesn't give many details. Tell me about this.
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, we're going to have a chat with Mr. Steve Brooks from the band Torch.
Torch is a band that always was attractive to me, and I'm reading from their website. So this is in their words. They said people always trying to figure out which compartment we fit into, and they want to put us on a shelf. But in the world of Black Sabbaths, we get to be Van Halen. So I've always really enjoyed heavy music, and they are one of the heaviest, but unique in that they didn't approach the music, I think, ever with the intent of fitting into a scene. And they're certainly, you know, punks and into the hardcore scene. They've got all sorts of different bands that they've played in over the ages. But, man, Floor and Torch both are unique amongst their peers. At the end of the day, they'd have an album that featured a pretty poppy, memorable tune with some hooks, followed by one of the heaviest crushing riffs you've ever heard. So they didn't really try to steer themselves into one bucket. They were difficult to define, and that's what made them continuously interesting throughout the career. He's got two bands in the rear view, and I am real eager to talk to him about the whole career because it's all interesting to me.
Here's our conversation with Steve Brooks. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the band. How did the band come together?
Which band? Floor or Torch?
Let's talk with Torch first.
So Torch started, my old band Floor was touring around, and basically we started 2 weeks after Floor broke up. And I met Rick through Andy Lowe from Robotic Empire Records, who was interested in Floor. At that time, Henry was playing in another band called Dove, and he was the drummer for Floor. And he just decided he was focusing on guitar. He was playing guitar then. So Floor just disbanded at that moment, and Andy Lowe told me about his friend that his band was on tour, and he was they just broke up. He lived in Miami as well, and he was like 19 when I met him. He was like a real fast grindcore drummer, and then we started jamming, and within like 3 months, we recorded our first record, and then started from there. Just went around in circles on tour, and until recently.
I remember you did a session with Kids Interview Bands.
Yeah.
And you were talking about being a kid, going out mowing lawns, like, you know, $5 a pop to mow lawns just to have pocket money to go buy a record on the weekend.
Yeah. Or like whenever I had the money, whenever I can get a ride to the mall to get a record. All my birthday money, everything was, you know, Christmas, everything I like, whatever list I had, my, you know, my mom or Santa was going everywhere looking for these somewhat obscure records and all that. Like, I remember, you know, it was like, oh, Santa couldn't find these. Santa had a special order of these. You
know? Take this opportunity to give yourself and your friends that special Christmas feeling. Everyone will enjoy listening to this fabulous Christmas treasury over and over again. Available on 2 records, 2 8-tracks, or 2 cassettes. Satisfaction guaranteed by RCA.
To order from anywhere in the U.S., including Alaska and Hawaii, phone toll-free 1-800-257-1234.
I was exposed to heavy music pretty young. I specifically remember being in Panama City, Florida, with, you know, 14 years old, there with the first, like, kind of love interest as a teenage kid, right, in line to ride the Viking ship. And I feel like the dude running the ride clocked me. He was like, you're trying to impress this girl. I got you. I'm going to give you the best 7.5 minutes of your life. And he turned up No More Tears so fucking loud. And I remember so vividly when Zakk Wylde's rhythm guitar part comes in and the heavy part hits, I was like, what the fuck is happening to my ears right now? Like, this is the heaviest shit I've ever heard. Whether you're talking about Floor or Torch, the recurring theme throughout all of it is the heaviest shit you've ever heard. Was there something in your childhood? Was there a band that like triggered that for you? Or they're like, holy shit, I got to do that.
I went and saw the Melvins in 91, and that was just changed me. I was like, I want to do something. This, it was heavier than any band I've ever seen live. And they, you know, they were like, had a free spirit, you know, and with their sound. And I was like, man, it's just like opened a door for me. You know, it was, I wanted to do that. And I wanted, you know, it was a mess. Floor was a mess when we first started and everything, but we were having a great time. It was just, it was exciting. And it was just heavy as shit. Like, some of my favorite recordings were just like boombox recordings of us, you know, like inspired by bands like the Melvins and Swans and Godflesh and the heavy bands, but not really with a more of a rock and roll spirit, you know, like not like a metal band, you know, that takes everything. Not every metal band, but, you know, I mean, we had Rainbow, we had not unicorns, but we had like Salamander, Flying Beast, and Rainbows and Sweets on our record cover. So the furthest thing. I mean, I think it's metal, but
people have always tried to pin you down into a genre and failed. It's like, you're a metal band, but you're not a metal band. You're a sludge band, but not. You're a doom band. There are a lot of weird words people have used to describe your music. And it's always, every time you see it in writing, it's like they are this genre, but not.
It's hard. I always said like, we're a heavy rock band, but, you know, like, I'm influenced by everything, you know, like metal included heavily, you know, so it comes through in what we sound like. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like melodic music and, you know, noisy garage rock and everything just kind of is, you know, part of the sound. I mean, most of my riffs were like, you know, inspired by like Gary Numan, you know, things like that. A lot of synth, like, you know, like, so I wanted the guitars to sound like a synth, you know, or like a,
always pushing sonic landscapes
accidentally.
Yeah. Even going back to Floor, like that heaviness and that sludginess was there. What, I'm a guitar player. Keith is not. Explain to Keith, what is a bomb string?
It's just a floppy string. It's like, you know what a tuning peg is? You're like to tune.
Yeah.
Just go as low as you can until it's flopping. And
literally flopping.
Literally flopping, yeah.
Now, were you guys...
All the guitars are doing that, it just sounds...
Were you doing anything to the guitars? Like, were you sanding down the nut of the E string and putting a bass string in there? Was there anything, like, special to achieve that?
No. Other people that understood what I was going for kind of helped me with, like, the newer guitars that I have, because I was always, you know, playing, like, a Les Paul and trying to keep it in tune. And then, you know, it's... not meant to be tuned that low.
Right.
Yeah. Now everything's like, I got my shit together, but it was an evolution. It was just, this sounds cool. So, but you know, it did.
Was that something you stumbled upon and you're like, oh, wait a second, I like that sound? Or was it sort of a desired thing where you're like, all right, I'm going to tune this down as far and just fuck with it?
I mean, when I first started doing it, I just had like a little super overdrive pedal and just plugged it straight into my Marshall amp and then cranked it. And it was just like feedback and, you know, noise. And I started off, you know, not even playing with the tone knob or anything. I was just, you know, just squealing, and it just sounded crazy and awesome. Started fucking around and, you know, getting a sound that I was happy with. I'm still always trying to find a sound that I'm happy with.
For people that are big fans of the doom genre, you know, Floor was kind of like a top band. They're kind of representative. Did you have any sense of that? Did you feel celebrated?
No, we would go on tour. We were kind of, you know, when Floor started touring, nobody was really at the shows, but we couldn't, you know, we had to keep going, you know, like, so, and then, you know, we put things out on indie, you know, like whoever would put out our records. So I didn't know. I mean, I was giving away records at the time, like little 7-inches and things. We'd play shows and I was like, oh, $2 here. You know, it didn't cost me anything. So I got to get rid of them. Yeah. I did not know back then what I know now. You know, there's so many. Thankfully, Anthony saved recordings in Floor, because I recorded over a lot of that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Kept going. And he had like a suitcase full of stuff. So we put out a box set. Thanks to him.
Yeah.
Cool. But I had no idea, you know, like I still don't, you know, like I think we have a small following, or Florida's, you know, and, you know, we got to put out another record after that self-titled, you know, and then we got to put out the record that we recorded 10 years before that self-titled.
Right.
you know, the Dove record around the same time, but we had disbanded in the late 90s for a few years, and I didn't think I would still be doing this now, you know.
Torch starts in 05 was the self-titled.
Yeah, we started in 2004 and self-titled came out that year.
So songs like Charge of the Brown Recluse, Vampiro, you know, that it felt like you came out swinging. Like that first record was really strong.
Vampiro and Charge of the Brown Recluse were songs that I had written with Floor at the end, you know, before we broke up. So Charge of the Brown Recluse was fully written, you know. Vampire was it was called Ass Smasher back in the day. I might have had a few risks, you know, like Without a Sound that was on Meanderthal was actually a that was a riff that I had written with Floor, and I ended up like recording a few records later. Yeah, so there were things floating around that I just ended up reusing. Yeah, I came out swinging. I was like, I have to get out of here. I got to start touring. I got to do something. I got to get out of Miami.
And you did. I mean, you guys for over a decade toured almost tirelessly. I mean, you were one of the hardest working bands in America.
Yeah, we busted our asses. they were crazy. Yeah, crazy times.
You guys came out like right on the heels of the self-titled record, In Return, you know, another song that kind of does put you in that sludge category. You know, there are a lot of Torch songs that if I had to get a soundtrack for Godzilla fucking up a city, like your catalog is where I go. Like two T-Rexes fighting in a tar pit.
Yeah,
you
know, that's like, right. Yeah, that was the sound I want. It's like, you know.
I think you got there, man. Tar Pit Carnivore is one of the heaviest songs ever written.
Nice.
The monster, the Godzilla soundtrack shit was there throughout the career. But the next couple records, you know, you did experiment. You embraced a little bit more of that like pop flourish that made me like, oh, hey, he is a Van Halen fan.
Yeah, I just wanted to do what I wanted to do, and you know, a lot of it came out more rock and roll, and confused some people who just probably don't listen to the same stuff I do.
Between Floor and those first two Torch releases, there was a Steve Brooks sound to your recordings that was consistent throughout. Was there ever any, I guess you'd call it metal purist pressure? Was there ever any like expectation from a label or a community to sound that way throughout? And did you have pushback when you started to experiment with things that you're like, oh, I could actually hear that tune on the radio?
I could never think about what I was doing on the radio. You know, I heard Floor on like college radio in the early 90s, and it was like, you know, it was like a friend's station, and I just don't think that way.
Hey, man, remember the good old days? You know, war, protest.
Going to jail.
Well, man, we found this new album called Freedom Rock. It's got all those great songs we used to groove to back then.
Credit card and COD customers call toll-free 1-800-248-6800 or save COD fees by sending $19.95 for four records or three cassettes or $24.95 for two compact discs, plus $3 shipping and handling to Freedom Rock 1033 Fleet National Bank Building, Department A, Providence, Rhode Island.
I mean, the scene that I knew, it was like a South Florida scene. It was just local bands, and they were all different, you know, like punk and, you know, pop and poppy punk and everything, pumpkin spice, everything. And so we weren't really a part of like the scene with, you know, a lot of the bands that Torch got lumped in with, I guess, this the Southern sludge thing. Because it was, I mean, we had that sound. It was that could fit with, you know, bands like I Hate God. And we got thrown into different things. Stoner rock came along and we got thrown into that. And then I heard emo doom or, you know, just different things, you know, like, oh, and it's, I'm happy that we confuse people in a way, but I just think it's a hybrid of all the things that I like that I wanted to do. You know, I wanted to put into Torch's sound, and it's all like some of the, like, extreme melody, you know, like extreme, you know, heaviness with, you know, hooks, you know, and.
Steve, you have always been pretty candid about your sexuality. And you had a 7-inch called Keep Up and Leather Feather that had a hummingbird in BDSM gear. There was some piss involved, I think, in the artwork.
That was Santos and me just being goofy, and he did it, you know, which is great. It was just like, yeah, like we'll put this on the Volcom 7-inch, you know. I mean, yeah. So it was ridiculous, and that's all it is. It's not, you know, there's no bestiality involved or anything.
No, you're not into BDSM.
What I originally, like, the original idea was I wanted a hummingbird taking nectar out of somebody's ear. And then we got crazy, and then there was like urinal. It was just like he put a cod piece or like whatever, you know, harness on him, and yeah.
there are trends, there are the through lines of sexuality and you through the band. My question for you is, could you have been as confident as you were over the years without Rob Halford kind of knocking the door open for sexuality and heavy metal?
No, because I came out before Rob Halford. You know, I was more in, I was selective with who I surrounded myself with. So, you know, like the whole macho attitudes and stuff, I wouldn't like hang out. I hung out with, you know, like more liberal thinking people. So I had the confidence through my friends, you know, like just to be myself. And I mean, cause you can go online and you can like find past interviews about, you know, whatever. And I was like, man, you got me. You're calling me to interview me about my sexuality. Like, you know, like I can't, I'm not going to do this. You know, I'm like, I've had enough of that. You know, it's like, I'm, you know, it's like, let's talk about the band. You know, I don't want it to be like a focus on anything. And I think at one point it started becoming a focus. I was open with everybody, you know, In fact, I would like ask people on tours, like, hey, do you know where there's a gay bar in town? You know, just to go out and, you know, and just be in a different environment sometimes. And
pulled into a pretty grove of pines and made ourselves comfortable. Then I heard music.
Volcom was like, it's a skateboard company, right? Like, they didn't start out as a record label.
Is more of a lifestyle brand because they do all kinds of different things. You know, they were putting out music for a little while, and then, you know, clothing and surf stuff, and they put on events. And yeah, when they were interested, we had some friends that were on Volcom, and you know, like they was, you know, finding out that they got like a good deal. I was like, oh shit. You know, like, you're interested in us? that was like the first, I think, record contract that we ever like really signed was going to Volcom headquarters in LA. And we're like, you know, like, how much? Yeah. They let us free in the friends and family store. And so I have no idea how much merch we took, but I was selling it on eBay shortly after. I had like stacks of like jeans, and I just used an old Volcom suitcase that we just took with me on tour.
You guys started making some pretty cool music videos around that time. I remember the kicking music video where the dude gets hit in the face with the kickball and then has like the whole Phoebe Cates hallucination.
That was actually the second attempt at filming a video for that song, because the first video we shot, we didn't like it. I think I was talking to Mark and it was this guy Andrew who shot the UFO video. I talked to him to see if he wanted to do a kicking video, you know, because it's on a budget. We just blew our budget on the first video that we didn't like. The coolest thing in that video, though, was like there was like a sick, like, I want to say 1970 Camaro. The theme was the guy was supposed to be driving, you know, took it for a test drive and he was supposed to be driving real crazy and everything. And it didn't look it. I think the guy who owned the car said, don't drive too crazy. So it didn't look crazy at all. He just like did one of those. And I was like, oh, that's weak, man. I thought he was going to, you know, he's going to really fucking do some jackass shit, you know?
Yeah. No burnt rubber on that one.
So with that whole idea and that whole thing that scrapped. So it was kind of like, oh, you know, I'm kicking, let's just do kickball or something. And they were like, yeah, we'll get a kickball game going and we'll just film it. So we did that, and Volcom sent them all their clothes, you know, so all their uniforms are Volcom. And
2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, like, you're a busy dude during those years, because Harmonicraft and all the Volcom stuff happens 2012. And then did Floor reunite for Oblation in 2013?
No, we reunited in 2010, and we were supposed to just do like a couple of shows, but they were sold out. And then the box set was doing well. And then there were people offering us money to do tours, and so we did that. And then Anthony and Henry from Floor, they were talking about doing another record. We throw the idea around, but I didn't have time because I was doing Torch, and I said, well, you know, you guys write and then I'll come down and, you know, I'll, you know, add vocals and add things to it, and we'll just finish the songs. And so Anthony and Henry wrote most of that record, you know, and I came in for it with a few songs, but then we, yeah, we put out the Oblation record, and then we got to tour more through that. And then Henry, you know, our drummer, started having health issues. So then that just kind of put everything on hiatus. And I, you know, like, I'm not looking back. I'm not going, you know, floor's gone, you know, so.
Release, tour. Yeah. Tour. I mean, you were hitting it.
It's all a blur. Can't you tell? I'm burnt.
Well, I'm going to see how many times I can say the heaviest song ever in this conversation, because, you know, Restarter comes out in 15 and Annihilation Affair is probably the heaviest thing I've ever heard come out of a speaker. And here comes this video for this song where you're working with Ian McKay. The video was visually compelling. Story by, is it Phil Mucci?
Yeah, that was exciting. He, you know, he killed it with the video. I thought, that's the peak of our videos right there. I'm really happy with how that one came out.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy that's doing music videos for Metallica and Korn and Monster Magnet. And, you know, here you've got Ian McKay and him working on the, like.
I threw it out there, you know, to see if he would do a video. And he said yes. And then he worked with us. And it's fucking awesome. And, he did a few things for us. He did that poster, which I got to get a framed version of it, but it was like a movie poster of the Annihilation Affair, like, video. He also did a shirt for us too, which was really awesome. And I had like a friend in, he had like a 3D print of the Annihilation, that robot guy. So I had like an actual like little action figure, but through moving and everything, like, there's a couple of pieces broken off and I gotta like glue back on, but it was pretty cool. that was an amazing collaboration, you know. And it was-
absolutely. I want to see if you can top this from, you know, rack your brain. Is there a more rock and roll story, a more rock and roll headline than, so this is April of 2012, Pitchfork Media. The headline is Bat Pisses in Torch Guitarist's Eye.
All right, then. I am on board for this story.
All right. You know, so Andrew, our other guitar player, he was living in St. Louis, and he had, you know, or he had lived in St. Louis, and he had some band stay at his old house, which was like an old house, you know. So apparently, like, when he turned on the light, the band, you know, like, he saw a shadow. So he looks up, and the guy's like, "Bat!" And all of a sudden, you know, he gets.
You can see how the executive
rain in his eye, and then he didn't go to the doctor or anything. And then I guess, you know, he posted the story on his Facebook.
St. Louis. There's a, yep.
His mom was scared. So she said, you don't know if that thing has rabies or whatever. So he had to go get rabies shots and all of his stuff. And so he posted the story on his personal Facebook thing. And then Pitchfork got a hold of it, or somebody did, and then put the story out, which was wild because, you know, my mom was reading about it like on Science, you know, like Science, it spread. It was great because it was also like right before our record came out too. So I was like, oh, this is perfect timing. So yeah, that was wacky. So we were, you know, he was famous for bat pee for a little while.
When Admission hit, it seems like just about every Torch record, you know, you could lean into it as a fan. You lean into it and go, okay, what's the new thing? What are they going to impress me with this time? And Admission came out, and From Here as an opening track is maybe one of the most furious opening salvos. I mean, you put that record on, you're like, these people mean business.
I like that. I like the first song, Punching You in the Face.
Yeah, and then, you know, you deliver some what I consider some of your best lyrical work and some lyrical subtlety in, you know, songs like Admission and Slide. I remember seeing you guys in Cleveland on that tour and talking to you and saying, man, this record's only been out a week and you're already at like, you know, 200,000 streams or something. This is going to be big for you guys. And it seemed like the band's trajectory was, and you'd already had some success. Like, you guys were getting booked on great tours and playing with cool bands. But I also remember a story that you told getting off of that tour and getting home and saying, you know, I got $200 in the bank account. Like, I got to try and pay rent. I got other stuff going on. I got, you know, a business on the side that I'm trying to run. At what point did you start to suspect that maybe the cost benefit analysis on everything wasn't coming out in your favor?
It's been like that for a long time. You know, I think we were able to make a living doing it for a long time, but COVID, you know, kind of threw everything for a loop. In a way, it change things for the better for me personally, because I'm living a different life, where I was constantly, you know, come home, work at a bar, you know, like go on tour, you know, just, you know, and then going on tour and then losing all my money and then, you know, not hearing from anybody, not knowing when you're going to end up doing this again, you know, I'm like, I'm 48 years old. I don't have a backup plan. I don't have any security, you know, and now, you know, it's like, that's the thing with music is, you know, it's a gamble. And I feel like I got to experience like things I would have never gotten to experience, you know, because I don't go on trips like, you know, like to Europe or, you know, Croatia or somewhere, you know, getting to do that, going to Russia right before the pandemic, it was so cool and terrifying and crazy at the same time, because how many bands are playing Russia, you know, after that? Yeah, no. I mean, we might have been one of the last bands to play Russia, you know, because we were flying home a couple days later, you know. So not the last band. I don't know what's going on over there, you know, but I don't expect to ever do that again, you know. We got to play on the Seth Meyers show, and good things were happening, and then the pandemic hit, and then that just changed everything.
You were in Europe. You just played Russia, like you said, and like you're overseas as an American, forced with that really kind of fucked up decision. Like, do we have to go home? Like, is this even an option?
We had to go home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I got home, and then a couple weeks later I was out here in Oregon and raising chickens and staying away from people and then trying to figure out what to do with my life, because I just kept seeing the numbers go up. I'm like, well, I'm not going on a tour anytime soon, so, you know, got to change.
I don't think you're alone. I think you're representative of a lot of musicians.
And a lot of people lost businesses and everything. Everything changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to clarify something. If there are any like really big Torch fans listening to this, there were people that traveled from a long ways off to see that Atlanta gig on the last tour with Meshuggah, thinking Steve said they're done. And you and I talked about this a little bit that night, but you know, it's also, it's the last gig of the tour and you've got people from all over wanting your time, but I want to get into it. When you said we're done, there were people like, oh my God, this is the last performance of this group. And I think maybe that's a misinterpretation. If Coachella called you up and said, hey, Steve, we got 10 grand that says we could get Torch to come play Coachella, there's no animosity between the band. Like, you guys would still get together for a one-off if the circumstances were right for you. Is that true?
We had discussed this, like if that were to have ever happened, which, you know, personally, I just didn't want to live that life anymore. I had no reason to really go to Miami. You know, my family isn't there anymore, you know, and it costs a lot of money to just go and rehearse, you know, that I don't get covered, you know, with expenses. So, so this tour had been postponed. It, you know, originally was offered to us, and I was like, well, shit, that's a tour that, you know, Meshuggah and Converge, that's like a tour we can't say no to. It's incredible. So, and then it got postponed, and personally, I had just, you know, we recorded some songs and, when you've just been in a marriage for too long and everyone's kind of moved on, and I personally have moved on. So, so I knew that back then I had made a decision that I was done with this band and I just wanted to go move forward. So I did this tour. So, I honestly don't think we'll do anything again. I think we're just not the same band anymore. And I'd rather just, if we're all in a good place and want to do it for fun or something like that, we got to be that in that good place. Like Floor, I didn't think Floor would ever do anything again. But I'm not planning on Torch ever doing anything again. And I'm fine with it. I've accepted it, and through the pandemic, it was Torch was my priority. It was all I had, so I would, and then all of a sudden everything changes and, I'm living a different life. I got a family, and, just grown apart. And, I honestly don't see it happening, which, I'm just ready to move on to the next thing really. I'm sorry to other people, but I'm not sorry for myself. I'm actually relieved. I want to play new songs and do different things at this point in my life. It was kind of weird going back and playing Floor songs, I wasn't the same person, and I'm doing these, these songs that I did demos of in the 90s. And I don't know, it's like Torch was a band for 18 years. I need to move, I need to grow. I don't feel like we're growing. That's my point of view. Those guys live in Miami, so they see each other all the time. It's a mission for me to fly across the country now to do this for fun, which it's not. I have more anxiety with the traveling part, but I don't know. I don't want it to happen. I honestly just would rather everybody just move on. I'm in a good place.
That's pretty wonderful. I want to end on something local to me. I think you caught wind of it a little bit, but to demonstrate the impact that you have had as a musician, I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. I know a city that, as when you lived in Atlanta, you lived in Miami, this was a town that was close enough that it made sense for you to hit many tours, and you played this city a lot of times and you have a lot of fans here. There's a bar here that every Halloween has local bands do cover sets, and it's always, David Bowie and The Cure and, groups that have sold millions and millions and millions of records. And this year there was a local band that got together and did a Floor set and fucking crushed it.
I heard about that. I saw some footage. It's fucking awesome. Like, what?
I think it was The Cure, David Bowie, somebody did a System of a Down set and Floor. And I was just like,
so random.
you have touched somebody.
Well, they touched us, they Henry, I haven't talked to Anthony, but Henry was like, have you seen this shit? I'm like, yeah, this would be great. I would go to their show, no doubt.
It was awesome. Hey, man, I'm really happy to see you happy and in a good headspace.
I'm happy too.
and it does tickle me a little bit to see, social media posts every now and again where you're like, oh yeah, I'm still playing that guitar. mostly doing dogs and you know, lots of chicken pictures. But you still pick that thing up.
I just got, this was in storage in Tampa when I was down there last week. I haven't played this in years. I was playing the JML. What do you want to hear?
Grenades.
Yeah, grenades. That's it.
Hey, man, thank you for the conversation.
Yeah, man, thank you.
Yeah, it's getting dark. I got to lock the chickens up. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Many thanks to Steve Brooks.
Our theme song is Rocket Sled by Blip. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunder Love Studios.
Written and produced by Keith R. Higgins and Jeff Calhoun.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley with the help of Mike Hunt. Edited by AJ Royce.
The songs you heard during this podcast were Scimitar by Floor, Admission by Torch, and Annihilation Affair by Torch.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino.
If you like what you've heard, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating. It really does help. Thanks for listening.
At Twitter, we are at Abandon Albums, and on Instagram, we are at Abandon_Albums.
Grazie.
Daily Leaf. Rob Janicki. Mike Pellegrino. Therina Vella. Ronnie Barnett. S.W. Loudon. Michael Janicki. Peyton Janicki. And our executive producer.
This is Thunderwolf.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Pawprint Media.